The Earth spins in space, illuminated from behind by shafts of white light. In white capital letters, the word Universal wraps around it. Gramercy Pictures presents a propaganda films single cell pictures production. Being John Malkovich. The dark blue velvet curtain of a small marionette theatre raises to reveal a finely sculpted wooden puppet of a man. The puppet has dark stubble and shoulder-length scraggy hair tied back in a ponytail. It stands leaning on a table laid out with two glasses. With incredible subtlety, the marionette raises his hand to his head. He scratches and then shakes his head with a look of disbelief in his perfectly crafted wooden eyes. He walks across the set to a mirror hanging on the wall. He reaches out and, staring intensely, delicately strokes his reflection. Suddenly his eyes widen in fear, and with seething rage he strides back to the table and hurls one of the glasses at his reflection. The mirror smashes. The thin black operating strings of the puppet work feverishly as he continues to violently destroy the room, overturning the table, breaking the chairs into pieces, and smashing a small flower pot across the floor. He pauses for a moment in a spotlight and looks up. Craig, a human version of the marionette, unshaven with scraggy shoulder-length dark hair and round metal glasses, stands above the puppet, operating the complex web of strings. The marionette Craig spins and performs a complex contemporary dance. He thrusts his hands into the air and then to the side before running at the wall, turning and landing in a press-up position on the floor. Sweat appears on the real Craig's brow as his fingers move like lightning. The puppet then leaps into the air and executes a series of acrobatic leaps and tumbles before collapsing onto the floor. He covers his face with his hands and weeps. Craig lifts the puppet out and hangs him up. He shakes his hands vigorously and winces slightly from the pain. Out of breath, he reaches over and grabs himself a half-drunk beer off his workshop table and takes a swig. A cockatiel perches on top of Craig's head as he lies asleep in bed.
Sorry, I didn't know that Warren Hatch was out of this cage. Come here. Morning, sweetheart. What are you going to do today, honey?
Working in the workshop.
You know, I was thinking, maybe you'd feel better if you got a job or something.
Laddie, we've been over this. Nobody's looking for a puppeteer in today's winter economic climate.
I know, honey. But I thought, you know, maybe something else until this puppet thing turns around.
Great Mantini doesn't need a day job.
Craig, not everybody can be Derek Mantini. I gotta get to the shop. We have a shipment of kitty litter coming in today. Honey, will you do me a favor? Will you just take a look at Elijah today? He's not feeling very good again.
Which one is Elijah again?
The chimp, honey.
Yeah, okay.
Later, Craig sits on the sofa reading the job ads with a chimp sat next to him watching TV.
And on the lighter side of the news in Westchester County today, puppeteer Derek Mantini thrilled onlookers as he performed the Belle of Amherst with a 60-foot Emily Dickinson puppet.
How dreary to be someone. How public, like a frog. To tell you one's name, you live long,
June. Gimmicky bastard. You don't know how lucky you are being a monkey. Because consciousness is a terrible curse. I think, I feel, I suffer. And all I ask in return is the opportunity to do my work. And they will allow it. Because I raise issues.
A ghetto blaster plays the dialogue for a puppet show performed by Craig on a New York street corner. The poster reads, Abelard and Heloise, a love story.
While we enjoy the pleasures of an uneasy love and abandon ourselves to fornication, we were spared God's severity.
Say no more, I beg you, and cease from complaints like these which are so far removed from the true depths of love.
Look, a puppet show!
Okay, honey, just for a minute. Mommy's waiting.
Even during the celebration of Mass, when our prayers should be pure. thoughts are on their very wantonness instead of my prayers.
The girl watches as inside the puppet theatre a monk listens to a nun from the other side of a wall.
Sometimes my thoughts are betrayed by the movement of my body.
I took my fill of my wretched pleasures in you, and this was the sum total of my love.
Craig feels the yearning emotions of the puppets as they desperately stroke either side of the wall, as if touching each other. Their movements become more lustful, and they writhe against the wall, simulating making love. The little girl watches inquisitively as her father stares in the opposite direction. The girl's father turns around and sees the puppets simulating sex.
You motherfucker!
Inside a pet shop, Lottie cradles a small grey cat before putting it back in its cage. Craig comes in with a split lip.
Oh, hey. Honey, not again. Why do you do this to yourself, honey?
I'm a puppeteer.
She looks at him pitifully before giving him a loving hug. At home, Craig sits hunched over a newspaper looking through the job adverts with a red ballpoint pen poised. He looks down the columns of jobs and size. As he goes to turn the page, he spots an interesting advert in the bottom corner. The advert reads, "Looking for a man with fast hands. Short-statured clerk with unusually nimble and dexterous fingers needed for speed filing. Lester Corp." Dressed in jeans and a shirt and tie and jacket, Craig meanders down the street towards the Flemmer building. He walks into the foyer and over to the business lists board next to the lift. Scanning down the directory, he finds that Lester Corp is situated on floor 7.5. He gets in the lift and studies the panel of numbers. There is no 7.5. He looks confused. A lady walks in and presses number 11 on the panel.
Seven and a half, right?
Yeah.
I'll take you through it.
The woman picks up a crowbar leaning in the corner of the lift. They both watch the floor numbers light up in succession. After 7, but before 8, the woman hits the emergency stop button. She opens the lift door with the crowbar and reveals a standard office hallway that from floor to ceiling is only about 4 feet high. Everything else is scaled down accordingly. Hunched over, Craig makes his way down the hallway looking for Lester Corp. He awkwardly wanders down the corridor, passing other hunched over office workers. Eventually, he finds a glass door with Lester Corp written across it. He goes inside and over to a middle-aged receptionist.
Welcome to Lester Corp. How may we meet your filing needs?
My name is Craig Schwartz, and I have an interview with Dr. Lester.
Please have a seat, Mr. Juarez.
Schwartz.
Pardon?
Schwartz.
I'm sorry, I have no idea what you're saying to me right now.
My name is Schwartz.
My name is Schwartz.
He gestures to her not to worry and goes to sit down with the other applicants.
Mr. Juarez?
Oh, yes?
Chest?
I said yes.
You suggest what? I'm sorry, I have no time for piddling suggestions from mumbling job applicants. Besides, Dr. Lester will see you now.
Oh, come in, Mr. Juarez.
Actually, my name is Craig Schwartz, Dr. Lester.
Security!
No, sir, it's just a little mix-up with your secretary. My name is Craig Schwartz. I tried to explain that to her.
She's not my secretary. She's what they call an executive liaison.
Ah.
And I'm not banging her, if that's what you're implying.
No, sir, not at all. I think I must have simply misspoke.
Dr. Lester, an older man with greying hair, sits in an ordinary-sized leather chair, staring at Craig, who looks uncomfortable in his tiny seat.
Well, now, Tell me, Dr. Schwartz, what do you feel you can bring to Lester Corp?
Well, sir, I'm an excellent filer.
Oh, yeah. All right. Let's see about that.
He scribbles on two pieces of paper and holds them up.
Tell me, which of these two letters comes first, this one or this one?
On one piece is a squiggle, the other the letter R.
The symbol on the left is not a letter, sir?
Damn, you're good. I was trying to trick you. Well, then, put these in order.
Yes, sir.
He hands Craig a bunch of index cards and watches wide-eyed as he orders them with amazing speed and dexterity.
Floris, get Guinness on the phone.
yes, sir. Genghis Khan Kapon. Fine.
Damn fine woman, Floris. I don't know how she puts up with this speech impediment of mine.
You don't have a speech impediment, Dr. Lester.
Flattery will get you everywhere, my boy. I'm afraid I have to trust Floris on that one. You see, she's got her doctorate in speech impedimentology from Case Western. I apologize if you can't understand a word I'm saying.
No, I understand perfectly.
Well, it's very kind of you to lie. You see, I've been very lonely in my isolated tower of indecipherable speech.
Confused, Craig stares at him.
You got the job. Any questions?
Well, just one. Why are these ceilings so low?
Low overhead, my boy. We pass the savings on to you. But seriously, that'll all be covered in orientation.
Hunched over, Craig leaves the Lester Corp's offices and makes his way into a room with a small television and rows of chairs. A few other new recruits sit facing the TV. Disinterested, Craig sits down and the lights dim. The television switches on and an old grainy film plays, the title of which is The 7½ Floor.
Welcome to the 7½ floor of the Merton Plumber Building. As you'll now be spending your workday here, it is important that you learn a bit about the history of this famous floor.
Hello, Don.
Hello, Wendy.
Don, I was wondering, do you know why our workplace has such low ceilings?
It's an interesting story, Wendy. Many years ago, in the late 1800s, James Merton, an Irish ship captain, came to this town and decided to erect an office building. He called this building the Merton Flimmer Building, after himself and someone else who local legend has it was named Flimmer. Well, one day, old Captain Merton received an unexpected visitor.
Captain Merton?
I will once again, child.
I'm not a child, but rather an adult lady of miniature proportions.
I see. Well, if it's charity you're after, begun with you, you foul demon.
I'm not asking for alms, Captain, but rather the ear of a kind man with a noble heart.
Well, speak then if you must.
Captain Merton, I'm afraid that the world was not built with me in mind. Doorknobs are too high, chairs are unwieldy, and high-ceilinged rooms mock my stature. Why cannot there be a place for me to work, and safe and comfortable?
Thy story has moved me like the other. Therefore, I shall make ye me wife. And I shall build a floor for ye between the 7th and the 8th in my own building. So at least there'll be one place on God's green earth where ye and your accursed kind can live in peace.
So that's the story of 7½. Since the rents are considerably lower, this floor has been adopted by businesses which, for one reason or another, have been forced to cut corners. After all, the overhead is low.
In the corner of the room, a woman wearing a tight-fitting, stylish white dress sits smoking and reading a magazine. Craig turns to her.
Moving story, huh?
Unfortunately, the story's bullshit.
He smiles childishly.
Listen, I'm Craig Schwartz. I'm just starting out at Lester Corp. Where are you just starting out?
Later, in Craig and Lottie's kitchen...
Sorry, honey.
He's learning to communicate.
Isn't that cute? I just taught him that today.
Yeah, that's adorable.
You want to do some dishes for me?
Put that down.
Here, Elijah. Here you go.
You know, I have an appointment tomorrow morning with Elijah's shrink.
Huh?
Yeah. I think we're finally getting down to the bottom of this acid stomach, aren't we?
Come here.
Craig lifts Elijah the chimp off the kitchen worktop.
Here, just get down from
the... They said it's some sort of childhood trauma. Feelings of inadequacy as a chimp, you know? Careful. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
I find it really interesting. So, honey, have you thought any more about us having a baby?
You know, I think it's just so tough right now, economically and all.
Mm-hmm.
That I think that maybe we should just wait and see if this job thing pays off. You know?
Masking her disappointment, she leans in and kisses him. At work, Craig stands by the coffee machine with the attractive woman from the day before.
I was thinking about what you were saying the other day about that orientation film being bullshit.
Yes.
I think maybe you're onto something.
And 50 other lines to get into a girl's pants.
No. I was just talking about the film.
Here's the thing. If you ever got me, you wouldn't have a clue what to do with me.
I was talking about the film.
Floris, the receptionist, watches Craig filing.
What magic. Those fingers could work on the right cabinet. Maybe you could alphabetize me. And don't forget, I comes before you.
Floris, I think you're very nice. But the truth is that I'm in love with someone else.
I'm afraid I have no idea what you're saying to me. You bastard.
What? Don't toy with Floris Schwartz.
Oh, no.
If I was 80 years younger, I'd box your ears.
I wasn't toying with her, sir. I wouldn't... Pardon me, how old are you, sir?
105. Carrot juice. Lots of it. I swear sometimes it's not worth it. I piss orange. Oh, and I have to piss sitting down like a goddamn girly girl every 15 minutes.
Ooh.
But nobody wants to die. Ah, to be a young man again, eh, Schwartz? Maybe then Floris would care for me.
But the elderly have so much to offer, sir. They're our link with history.
I don't want to be your goddamn link, damn you. I want to feel Floris's naked thighs next to mine. I want my body to inspire lust in that beautiful, complex woman. I want her to shiver with a spasm of ecstasy, Schwartz, as I penetrate her
wet... Dr. Lester? While I'm flattered you would share your feelings with me, perhaps the workplace is not the most suitable environment for this type of discussion.
All right. I tell you what, meet me after work today at Jerry's Juiceteria on Lex, and I'll spill my goddamn guts for you.
Hunched over, Craig speaks on a payphone in the corridor.
No, I won't be late, love. I just have to, you know, listen to Lester's sexual fantasies, drink carrot juice for a while. You know, it's a job thing, really.
The attractive woman walks past, and Craig signals for her to wait.
Yeah, so, I'll talk to you later, okay? Yep, you too. Gotta go back to work. Okay, bye. Hi. Do you know that I don't even know your name or where you work?
Yeah.
He looks at her, flummoxed.
Okay, how about this? If I can guess your name in 3 tries, you have to come have a drink with me tonight.
Why not?
Okay. You look like a...
He stares intensely at her.
Carol Tavisher Suzanne Maxine?
Yeah. Who told you?
Nobody told me. That just came out. Don't you think isn't that odd? So where do you live and stuff?
I am dubious, but I don't Welsh. Okay, meet me at the Stuck Pig, 7 o'clock. If you're late, I walk.
At the Juiceteria.
Nuba, blonde, wet with desire, me in leather. A harness, if you like. And all eyes, Craig, are upon me as I speak. Ladies, I begin. I am the love god Eros. You like that? I intoxicate you. My spunk is to you mana from heaven.
Dr. Lester, this is all really fascinating and stuff, but I gotta get back home to my wife.
Oh, you have a wife. I'd like to meet her, Craig.
Yes, sir.
Shall we say dinner Thursday? You can come, too, if you like. You get that? That was a joke. You hear what I said? You can come, too.
That was a good one. All right, thank you.
Maxine sits at the bar looking at her watch. Craig races in and frantically looks around the room before spotting her and sitting down.
Maxine. Made it. Made it, Maxine.
Just.
Buy a drink, Maxine. Maxine.
Are you married?
Yeah, but enough about me.
Yeah.
What do you have?
I'll more of the same, please, Barry.
And I'll have light beer or something.
He grins at her.
So, I like you. I don't know what it is about you. I just...
My tits?
No.
No?
No, it's your energy, your attitude, you know, the way you carry yourself.
You're not a fag, are you?
No, I am really attracted to you.
Really attracted to you. Christ, you are a fag. Okay, well, we can share recipes if you like, Darlene.
No, wait, listen. I love your tits. I love
good.
I want to fuck you.
Great, now we're getting somewhere. Not a chance. So tell me about yourself. Huh? I mean, if you can get your mind out of the gutter long enough, dog boy.
Well, I'm a puppeteer. And I've been...
Check.
Lottie sits in the living room brushing Elijah.
Hey.
Hey.
I'm sorry I'm so late. I just... Lester just wouldn't let me get away. Hi, Elijah. We're supposed to have dinner with him on Thursday, but I can get us out of it if you want. It's amazing. He's like this insane old lech, and it's kind of amusing once you get past how disgusting it actually is.
Did you eat?
No. I'm not hungry. I'm sorry I didn't call. You know, it was just hard to get away, you know?
Yeah, I was worried.
I'm sorry. You know, you wanted me to work. How's your evening?
Well, Tom's puncture wound is infected.
Ferret?
The iguana.
Right.
So I just dressed the wound, and I've just been feeding everyone and putting everybody to bed.
You want a beer?
No, I think I'm going to go to bed. Elijah's going to sleep with us tonight. I don't think he's feeling very well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm going to go to my workshop for a little while, you know, but I'll be in a little while.
Okay.
In his workshop, Craig delicately paints the bright red toenails of a Maxine puppet. It has brown bobbed hair, ruby red lips, and is striking and sexy just like the real Maxine. He looks adoringly at the puppet as he works on her. Discarded, a Lottie puppet hangs by a hook. She has wildly frizzy, unkempt hair, dowdy clothes, and wears no makeup, just like the real Lottie. Despondent, Lottie lies in bed, whilst in the workshop, Craig works the Maxine and Craig puppets as they sit on the edge of the small stage.
Tell me, Craig, why do you love puppeteering? Well, Maxine, I'm not sure exactly. Perhaps it's the idea of becoming someone else for a little while. Being inside another skin. Thinking differently. Moving differently. Feeling differently. Interesting, Craig. Would you like to be inside my skin? Think what I think. Feel what I feel. More than anything, Maxine. Wildest dreams.
The Craig marionette watches bewitched as the Maxine puppet seductively strokes her hair and closes her eyes. He leans in and tenderly kisses her. At work, Craig and Maxine stand hunched over by the coffee machine.
You're not somebody I could get interested in, Craig. You play with dolls.
Puppets, Maxine. You see, it's the idea of being inside someone else's skin and seeing what they see and feeling what they feel.
Yikes.
It's just that, well, Please, let me explain. Yeah. You know, it's just that I've never done this before, but, you know, I feel something through Maxine. I've never felt this way before. You know, about anybody, not even my wife. And I just really feel that you and I belong together, Maxine.
Aww. He ambles back to his office where he busies himself filing. Downtrodden, Craig pulls out dozens of files. As he shuts the drawer, one of them falls down behind the cabinet. He tries to grab the file, but it falls out of reach. Struggling, he tries to move the filing cabinet. Unable to do so, he uses a trolley to lever the cabinet over on one side and away from the wall. He reveals a piece of 2x4 covering a small area of the wall. He pulls it off. He uncovers a small door about 3 feet high. He bends down and takes a closer look. He inspects the tiny door and tries the handle. The door flies open to reveal a dark tunnel. Craig stares into the hole. He screws up his face and looks confused. He taps the floor and the ceiling of the tunnel with a piece of wood. Crouched at the entrance, he leans in, then suddenly turns and checks over his shoulder. He scurries across the room and makes sure the coast is clear before closing the office door. He bends down and inspects the tunnel inquisitively. Holding on to the piece of wood in one hand, he gets slowly onto all fours and makes his way inside. He creeps slowly along the dark, dank passage. Nervously, he glances back at the opening before continuing further into the darkness. As he crawls deeper into the tunnel, the dirt floor beneath him starts to become wetter, and he puts his hand deep into the squelching mud. The door closes behind him and a fierce wind races through the tunnel, sucking him violently through the passage. There is a flash of light and suddenly we are looking down on a newspaper through a stranger's eyes. The edges of the screen are faded black. We watch through the eyes of a stranger as he takes a bite of toast and a drink of coffee. He puts down the paper and picks up his plate and cup and strolls into a clean and modern kitchen. He puts the cup in the sink and turns on the tap. The stranger walks through his plush apartment towards the front door. He stops to pick up his wallet and then looks at himself in the mirror. He strokes his shiny bald head and dusts down his smart black suit jacket. He bares his teeth and then checks them by running his finger across the front. Then he reaches down and picks up his keys. Back in the office, Maxine chats on the phone with her feet up on the desk.
Oh, you know what? The puppeteer told me he loved me today. I know, I can't think of anything more pathetic. I'm sorry.
Afternoon, sir.
We watch through the stranger's eyes as he walks outside and gets into a waiting New York taxi cab.
The Broadhurst Theatre, please.
Watching from the stranger's viewpoint, we see the cabbie adjust his rearview mirror and study his passenger.
Hey, say, meet you that actor guy?
Yes.
Yeah, John, don't tell me. Mapplethorpe?
Malkovich.
Malkovich. Right, right. Okay. Okay, yeah. I thought you were all right in that one movie.
Thank you.
And one where you played a jewel thief?
I never played a jewel thief.
No? Who am I thinking of?
I don't know.
Just, No, I'm pretty sure it was you.
The picture rapidly disappears. As it reappears without the black edges, Craig falls from out of nowhere into a ditch. Soaking wet and dirty, he stands and looks at his surroundings with a puzzled expression. He scrambles up the grass verge and onto the side of the road and stares at the twin towers towering over the New York skyline in the distance. Turning round, he spots the busy New Jersey Turnpike. Completely baffled, he stumbles down the road and sticks his thumb out to hitch a lift. Later in the office, Maxine is still on the phone when Craig bursts in, disheveled and exhausted.
Yeah, absolutely, doll. Yeah, I'm just about to close up. Want to meet at the pig? 20 minutes? Cool. Bye.
Hey, I'm splitting for the day, puppet man. Lock up for me, okay?
Don't you want to know what happened to me?
No.
Please, this is important.
Better be.
It is.
He paces excitedly.
There's a tiny door in my office, Maxine. It's a portal, and it takes you inside John Malkovich. You see the world through John Malkovich's eyes, and then after about 15 minutes, you're spit out into a ditch on the side of the New Jersey Turnpike.
Sounds great. Who the fuck is John Malkovich?
Oh, he's an actor. He's one of the great American actors of the 20th century.
Oh, yeah? What's he been in?
Lots of things. That Jewel Thief movie, for example, he's very well respected. Anyway, the point is, this is a very odd thing. It's supernatural, for lack of a better word. I mean, it raises all sorts of philosophical type questions, you know, about the nature of self, about the existence of a soul, you know? Am I me? Is Malkovich Malkovich? I had a piece of wood in my hand, Maxine. I don't have it anymore. Where is it? Did it disappear? How could that be? Is it still in Malkovich's head? I don't know. Do you see what a metaphysical can of worms this portal is?
He stares at her expectantly.
I don't see how I could go on living my life the way I've lived it before.
She gestures to the open window and walks out, patting him on the head as she passes. At home, Craig towel dries his hair in the bathroom.
Maxine. Yes, of course, Maxine. He's a celebrity.
Good. We'll sell tickets.
Tickets to Malkovich?
Exactly. $200 a pop.
But Maxine, there's something, you know, I don't know, like profound here. I don't know. Maybe we should exploit it. You think?
I need you for this, Craigie. You're my man on the inside.
You need me? I'm your man?
Sure, whatever.
Hey, everybody. Treats for everyone.
We don't know the significance of this thing. It might be dangerous to toy with.
Well, I'll protect you, dollface. Bye-bye.
Who's that?
Lottie and Craig walk to the car.
So, you know, I'm going to be working a lot of late nights. Because, you know, with this partner, because Lester Corp's open during the day, so I'll be working a lot of late nights, you know? But it's a good thing, not a bad thing, because it's going to get us out of the hole financially, because we're going to turn it into a business.
Yeah, but Craig, I don't understand. There's no such thing as a hole or a portal into somebody's brain.
Yes, there is. You need a brain or a soul or whatever. I was inside John Malkovich looking out.
Really?
Yep.
I want to try it then.
Pardon me?
I want to be John Malkovich tomorrow. That'd be perfect, because then I can meet your partner. I'd love to meet...
No, the thing is, as I said before, Lester Corp's open during the day, so we can't go during the day. But I'll tell you what, if you want to, we can do it right now.
Now?
Tonight.
Right now?
Yeah, right now, on the way to Lester's.
In the office, Craig opens the small door to the tunnel. A light breeze ruffles Lottie's hair as she bends down and stares into the passage, open-mouthed.
I'll meet you on the side of the road by the New Jersey Turnpike.
Mesmerized, she takes a deep breath and swallows the lump in her throat.
I'm scared.
You don't have to do this, you know.
No, I want to go.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
She tentatively makes her way into the dark, dank tunnel. The door slams behind her as she speeds through the portal and into the head of John Malkovich, who has stood in the shower soaping himself.
Wet? Weird.
The edges of the screen are faded black as we watch from inside Malkovich's head. He grabs himself a towel and starts to dry himself off.
That's nice. Oh. Oh. Mm. Oh. Mm. Sexy.
Craig paces at the side of the road. Lottie suddenly falls from nowhere and lands in the ditch.
Lottie, are you all right?
Wet and disheveled, but smiling ecstatically, Lottie sits in the ditch.
Craig! I gotta go back!
Okay, maybe tomorrow.
No, right? No! I gotta go here! I gotta go back now!
We'll talk about it later.
Being inside did something to me. I knew who I was. It's like everything made sense, you know? I was.
You weren't you. You were John Malkovich.
I was, wasn't I? I was John Malkovich. I was John fucking Malkovich. Take it back, Craig.
We're late for Lester.
Lottie stares distractedly out of the window. Later, at dinner at Lester's...
Tell me, Lottie... Can you understand a word I'm saying?
Oh, yes, Dr. Lester, absolutely. You were just explaining the nutritional value of ingesting minerals through a colloidal form, which I personally couldn't agree more with.
Oh, it stilled my heart.
She smiles sweetly at him.
Dr. Lester, would you mind just pointing me in the direction of the restroom?
Oh, with the greatest of pleasure, my dear. You'll go up the grand escalier. And once atop the stairhead, you'll want to enter the fifth door on my left. Watch the step down. It's sunken.
Okay. Thank you.
Lottie walks up the sweeping staircase and counts the closed doors at the top, looking for the bathroom. Puzzled, she opens one door and looks inside before shutting it and moving on to the next. As she walks inside the large room, she's taken aback by hundreds of framed pictures of John Malkovich adorning the walls. Some are of him performing in theatre and films. Others are of him relaxing. On one of the walls, the pictures chart a timeline of Malkovich through his life. She smiles as she studies the images on the wall, which are from Malkovich's birth right through to the present day. Underneath one picture of him in his American football team is a label, dozens more of the pictures from throughout moments of his life have labels underneath them. Later, in the car on the way home.
What do you think Lester's relationship with John Malkovich is?
That portal's been boarded up forever. I bet Lester's not even aware of it. Him. The portal. Why?
No reason. I was just thinking, you know, do you think that it's kind of... weird that John Malkovich has a portal? I mean, do you think that it might have some sort of significance, for example?
I don't know. Why do you think that?
Yeah, I don't even care. I think it's kind of sexy that John Malkovich has a portal, you know? Sort of like it's like he has a vagina. Sort of vaginal, you know? Like he has a penis and a vagina. I mean, sort of like Malkovich's feminine side.
The next day in the office.
Visit JM Inc., Merton Flemmer Building, nightly, from 9 p.m. to 4 a.m.
Sounds good. Oblique but intriguing. Phone it in. You want me to phone it in?
No.
Maxine dials the number with her pencil. Lottie appears at the door.
Lottie!
Hi. I heard your voice.
What are you doing here?
Is this your partner? She's pretty. I had to do the Malkovich ride again, you know? Is this her?
Hi, you're Craig's wife?
Yeah, hi.
Lottie, Maxine, Lottie.
So have you done Malkovich yet?
Hi, yeah, I want to place an ad. Okay, ever want to be someone else? No, that's the ad, but we can talk about you in a minute. Ever want to be someone else? Now you can. Visit JM Inc. Inc. Merton, M-E-R-T-I-N, Flemmer.
You should really be at work.
I've been going over and over my experience last night, Craig. It was amazing. I've decided that I'm a transsexual. I know it's the craziest thing, Craig.
Are you fucking nuts?
No, it's just that for the first time, everything just felt right. I've got to make sure. But if the feeling is still there, I'm going to talk to Dr. Feldman about sexual reassignment surgery.
This is absurd. Besides, Feldman is an allergist, and if you're going to do something, do it right. We talked about this a million times, all right? You get these half-assed ideas, and then you do a half-assed job. Just drop it.
It's just that I really, you know, I like Dr. Feldman, all right? So I thought that I would ask him his opinion. Why? Is there something so terrible about that? Why do you always yell at me like that?
Sweetie, I'm sorry, okay? It's just a phase. It's the thrill of seeing through somebody else's eyes. Okay, it'll pass.
Don't stand in the way of my actualization as a man.
Let her go, Craig.
Okay.
I mean him.
Right now?
Uh-huh.
It's the middle of the day. How am I going to get her past Lester?
Yawn, figure it out.
Okay, let's go. Come on.
Bye.
Bye.
Maxine picks up the phone.
Davey, it's Max. Listen, can you get me John Malkovich's home phone?
But what I have been through. I am hungry as the winter. I am sick, anxious, poor as a beggar. Fate has tossed me hither and thither. I have been everywhere. Everywhere.
So strong.
But wherever I have been, every minute.
I want that voice.
My soul has been full of mysterious
anticipations.
I feel the approach of happiness.
Anticipation.
Anya, I see it coming. Yeah?
Mr. John Malkovich?
Yeah, who's calling?
Oh, my goodness. You don't know me, but I know you. I'm a great admirer of yours.
How did you get this number?
It's just that I dream about you, and, even speaking to you now has gotten me sort of excited, you know?
Wow. The way this woman's talking, Tim.
Listen, I really don't find this amusing. Don't call here anymore, okay?
Wow. My nipples are at attention, General Malkovich, sir.
What, her nipples?
So listen, why don't we have dinner tonight? Bernardo's? 8 o'clock? I really want to see you. I just loved you in that Jewel Thief movie.
You're not gonna meet her there? Come on! Meet her there!
The winter. I am sick, anxious, poor as a beggar.
Meet her there!
Everywhere! But wherever I have been, every minute.
Meet her there.
Lottie falls from out of nowhere into the ditch. She's wet and slimy.
How was it?
I had to go back at 8 o'clock exactly tonight.
Why?
Don't cry, Craig.
John Malkovich sits in a busy Italian restaurant checking his watch. He scans the room looking for someone. A man approaches his table.
Excuse me. Are you John Malkovich?
Yes, I am.
Wow. You're really great in that movie. Oh. You play that retard.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
I have a cousin who's a retard.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so, as you might imagine, it means a lot to me to see retards portrayed on the silver screen so compassionately.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Night.
The guy leaves, and the edges of the screen turn to faded black.
Maxine? It's Maxine.
Hi. I'm so glad you decided to come. I'm Maxine.
I'm John. How do you do?
Good.
Yeah, I wasn't sure I was going to come, but I felt oddly compelled.
You're so beautiful. I mean, the way you're looking at me. I mean, at him, at us. I've never been looked at like this by a woman before. I think I'm sweating.
I must say I was rather intrigued by your voice.
And the funny thing is, Mr. Malkovich, my voice is probably the least intriguing thing about me.
So how was it? What was he doing?
He wasn't doing anything, really. He was just sort of hanging around his apartment. You know, I think he's probably just a really lonely guy.
You see, men can feel unfulfilled too, Lottie. I'm glad you're finally coming to realize that. You know, you shouldn't be so quick to assume that switching bodies is going to be the answer to your problems. Okay?
You're right, Craig. You're right. You know what I was thinking? I was thinking that maybe we could, we should invite Maxine over for dinner one night, you know? Because you guys are partners and all, and I thought that might be a really nice gesture. I think she'd really like that, you know?
Maxine?
What?
The thing is that there's been some tension between us at work, you know, like business stuff, and I would hate to expose you to that.
It'll be okay with that. I'll cook my lasagna, we'll smoke a joint, and you... tensions will just melt away.
At JM Inc.
Now, when you say that I can be somebody else, what do you mean exactly?
Well, we mean exactly that. We can put you inside someone else's body for 15 minutes.
Can I be anybody that I want to be?
Well, you... Actually...
You can be John Malkovich.
It's perfect. It's my second choice, but it's wonderful. It's...
The man is struggling not to cry.
I'm a fat man. I am sad and I'm
$200.
Fat. Oh, yes.
He hands over the money and Maxine counts it. Craig opens the portal door.
Okay, gotta crawl in there.
Oh, my God.
Craig and Maxine watch as he slowly crawls inside. The door shuts and he's transported through the portal into John Malkovich. The screen edges have faded black and we are looking down at a bathroom catalogue.
No, that's what I'm saying. See, I don't really need an extra bath mat. So if I get the set, would it be possible if I could just get maybe 3 extra hand towels? If I get the set instead of the bath mat?
Yes, sir. Sure, we can do that.
Great. That sounds good. And for the color periwinkle?
Oh, I'm sorry. We're out of stock in periwinkle. Do you want to back order?
No, I'll go with the Loden.
Would you like to order anything else?
Well, just what is the difference between the foot pampering looped cotton rug and a bath mat?
Craig sits in his car waiting for the fat man. Suddenly he falls out of nowhere and into the ditch. The man is wet and disheveled. He runs over and gives Craig a hug. At Craig and Lottie's.
Did you know that Eskimos have not one, but 49 words for snow?
Oh.
It's because they have so much of it.
Maxine looks awkwardly at Lottie.
So much snow.
After dinner, I'll show you my puppets.
After dinner, I'll introduce you to my chimp, Elijah. He has an ulcer right now due to suppressed childhood trauma. But we're working through it. Psychotherapy.
Maxine takes a long draw on her cigarette before hiding her unease behind an enormous smile. Lottie and Craig watch entranced by her as she gets up from the table and wanders over to a picture of Craig skiing. She picks it up for a closer look.
Bedroom?
Yeah. The thing is, the way that I see it, and you know, is I think the world is divided into those who go after what they want and then those who don't.
right? I mean, right. The passionate ones, the ones who go after what they want, mm-hmm. Well, they may not get what they want. but at least they remain vital, you know?
Yeah.
So when they lie on their deathbeds, they have few regrets, right?
Lottie and Craig sit either side of her as she rolls a joint.
And the ones who don't go after what they want? Well, who gives a shit about them anyway?
They both try and kiss her.
Oh, God. Lottie!
Craig! Oh. I don't find you attractive. And Lottie, I'm smitten with you. I am, but only when you're a Malkovich. When I looked into his eyes last night, I could feel you peering out.
Really?
Behind the stubble and the too prominent brow and the male pattern baldness, I sensed your feminine longing. And it just slew me.
God.
Oh, only as John, sweetie. Sorry.
Maxine pats her on the head.
Hey, thanks for a wonderful dinner. No hard feelings, partner?
Dejected and confused, Lottie and Craig sit slumped on the sofa staring into space. Dozens of men wait in line crouched in the corridor outside JM Inc.
JM Inc.
Hi, it's Lottie. I'd like very much to see you again. Can you call him and invite yourself over?
When?
Tonight, after you close.
Okay, 4:11. 4:11?
Thank you, Maxine.
You're welcome.
Tucked up in bed, Craig looks glumly at the empty space next to him. At his apartment, John Malkovich stands preening himself in the hallway mirror. Then he straightens his tie and jacket. Maxine stands in the doorway in a long, black, elegant dress.
Thanks so much for having me over, Sugar Plum.
Glad you called. Shall we to the boudoir?
He presses up against her and feels her breast.
Couple minutes. I'm early.
She struts off into the apartment. They sit awkwardly on the sofa, shooting uneasy glances at each other.
So do you enjoy being an actor?
Sure. Yeah, it's very rewarding.
Bored, she picks up a pot off the table and plays with it before putting it back. She glances over at a clock on the mantelpiece. The time is 4:11. She turns eagerly to Malkovich and searches in his gaze. She smiles girlishly and waves. She crawls on top of him and starts to kiss him. Watching through Malkovich, we see Maxine sexily straddle him.
Oh, my sweet Maxine. My darling.
I love you, Lottie.
In Malkovich's ordinary world...
Did you call me Lottie?
Do you mind?
No, not really.
Watching back through Malkovich.
Oh, God. My sweet, beautiful Lottie.
Oh, Maxine.
Yes, Maxine. Yes.
Maxine, this is so right. Oh, God.
With a look of sheer ecstasy, Lottie drops down into the ditch, soaking wet. She just lies there happily. Later, she creeps into their apartment. She looks guiltily over at Craig, who has sat in the dark, cradling a cup of coffee.
You were him, weren't you?
Yeah.
And he was with her.
We love her, Craig.
We?
John and me.
Don't forget about me!
Will you have the Maxine action figure to play with? I'm sorry. That was nasty.
With his head bowed, he walks away. At work, Craig looks thoroughly miserable as he stands filing. He doesn't hear Floris nattering away next to him. Maxine sits on the floor in her office, smoking. Downtrodden and unkempt, an angry Craig storms in.
You are late, my little cowboy.
Are you torturing me on purpose?
I've fallen in love.
I don't think so. You know why? Because I've fallen in love! And this is what people who have fallen in love look like.
Well, you pick the unrequited variety. It's very bad for the skin.
He glares at her with disdain.
You're evil, Maxine.
Do you have any idea what it's like to have two people look at you with total lust and devotion through the same pair of eyes? Wow. No, I don't suppose you would. It's quite a thrill, Craigie.
He runs out and races past the long line of waiting portal customers, all clutching their cash. He runs with determination through the dark streets of New York. Beads of sweat roll down his cheeks and a look of rabid obsession flickers through his eyes. At home, Lottie strolls in and turns on the light. Craig hides underneath a table in the corner, nervously holding a gun. He watches her as she moves about the apartment. Suddenly he scurries out and charges at her from across the room. He leaps over a large work table and falls.
What are you doing? What is that?
And I don't know how to use it very well, so don't make any sudden move.
She tries to run off.
I'm serious. I'm serious.
Suck my dick.
Shut up, okay? Just shut up.
Keeping the gun aimed at Lottie, he dials the phone.
Craig!
Tell her you need to see her.
J.M. Inc., be all that someone else can be.
I need to see you.
Sweetie. Oh, I had so much fun with you last night. Shoot, but it's business hours.
What the hell? You know? Live dangerously. Close early.
Ooh, doll. I love this new devil-may-care side of you. Alrighty. I'll track down Loverboy and I'll see both of you in 1 hour. Exacto mundo.
He drags Lottie across the floor and over to Elijah's cage. With her hands and feet tied and her mouth taped up, Lottie lies terrified in Elijah's cage. Malkovich rehearses on stage.
Was ever woman in this humor wound? Was ever woman in this humor won?
Maxine looks at her watch and signals it's time to leave.
Tommy, can I take 50?
Back at Maxine's apartment, they have passionate sex on the sofa.
Oh. Oh, Lottie. Lottie, this is so good.
Seen through Malkovich.
My God. This is amazing.
Lottie.
I want to touch your breast. Touch your breast. Move right hand across left breast.
God.
Move right hand across left breast now. Move right hand across left breast now. Holy shit, yes.
Yes.
Holy shit, he said what I said.
What I said.
Lottie, is that you?
Yes, yes, sweetheart, yes.
Yes, sweetheart, yes. What the fuck is going on? That's not me. I didn't say that.
Oh, Maxie.
Oh. Craig falls from nowhere into the ditch at the apartment.
Something was making me talk. Some goddamn thing was making me move. I gotta get out of here.
Oh, dollface. It was just your passion for me taking hold.
No, dollface. I know what my passion taking hold feels like.
Bye.
I did it! I made him move his arm across your girlfriend's glorious tit. Oh. And I made him talk, sort of.
It's just a matter of practice. Before Malkovich is nothing more than another puppet hanging next to my work table.
He smiles at her through the cage.
I'll tell you about it when I get home, okay? All right?
Malkovich paces nervously through his apartment, closing all of the doors and curtains. The actor Charlie Sheen sits on the sofa playing with a Rubik's Cube.
No, man, I'm sorry, too. I'm sorry to have called you like that, but I was just really, really scared. And I was so freaked out. I mean, it was like somebody was just moving all the way through me, moving my arms, moving my hands, talking for me. I mean, I feel like I'm going crazy, Charlie.
I'm sure you're not going crazy.
You don't understand, man. It's like nothing I've ever felt.
Yeah, yada, yada, yada. Were you stoned?
Yes. Yes, Jesus. Yes. Yes, I was stoned. But that doesn't have anything to do with it. Charlie, someone was talking through my mouth.
You were stoned. Case closed. End of story. How hot is this, babe?
You know what? Maybe it was this Lottie woman talking, because it could have been her talking through me. Because the weird thing is this Maxine likes to call me Lottie.
Ouch. That is hot. Maybe she's using you to channel some dead lesbian lover. Sounds like my kind of gal. Let me know when you're done with her, yeah?
What are you talking about, done with her, man? Tonight really freaked me out.
You're nuts to let a girl go that calls you Lottie. I'll tell you that as a friend.
Charlie, I don't know anything about the girl, man. She could be like a fucking witch or something.
That's even better. Hot lesbian witches. Think about it. It's fucking genius.
I gotta know the truth, Charlie.
Truth is for suckers, Johnny boy.
At nighttime, Malkovich sits in his car outside Maxine's apartment. He wears a baseball cap and tries to look inconspicuous and hide out of view. Maxine leaves her building and gets into a yellow cab. As the taxi passes him, he sets off and follows quickly behind her. He follows her through the city to the Flemmer building. The doors to the packed lift are prized open and Maxine climbs out and leads a group of customers down the corridor. Hidden by his baseball cap and shades, Malkovich hangs back from the group and looks around, astounded by the dimensions on floor 7.5. Intrigued, he makes his way down the tiny corridor. Spotting the tail end of the line of men, he follows them and comes across a door with a handwritten JM Inc. sign attached to the front. He heads inside and scurries to catch up with the line of men. With a look of concern, he approaches the last man who stood in the queue.
Excuse me, sir, exactly what type of service does this company provide?
You get to be John Malkovich for 15 minutes. 200 clams.
Gobsmacked, he runs to the front of the line.
I see.
No cutting, by the way.
Hey, what's that?
No cutting!
Hey, no cut!
Break it up! Break it up! Cut it out! Everybody get to...
It's him, it's John.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Malkovich. I hope we didn't hurt you too terribly.
Get inside!
Your throat.
Darling!
What the fuck is going on?
John Malkovich, John, Mr. Malkovich, sir, Mr. Malkovich, I think I can explain.
Yeah, explain.
My name is Craig Schwartz, and we operate a little business here that simulates for our clientele, well, the experience of being you, actually.
Simulate?
Yeah, after fashion.
What exactly does that mean?
Well, it's hard to describe.
I want to do it, then.
I'm sure that would pale in comparison to the actual experience.
I want to do it!
But right now, Mr. Hiroshi's in the tube, and he's got
about...
Let
him do it, Craig.
Of course. Right this way, Mr. Malkovich. Compliments of the house.
Craig opens the portal door, and Malkovich crouches down and stares into the dark tunnel in amazement.
Jesus.
Crawling on all fours, he nervously makes his way inside the dark, dank tunnel. Craig and Maxine watch from the office as he disappears deep into the darkness.
What happens when a man goes through his own portal?
We'll see.
He creeps deeper into the muddy tunnel. The further he goes, the wetter the floor beneath him becomes. As the door slams shut, he's sucked through the portal into his own body, sat at a table in a restaurant. We see through Malkovich's eyes a sexy woman sat in front of him, but she is also John Malkovich.
Malkovich? Malkovich, Malkovich.
The waiter is Malkovich.
Malkovich, Malkovich. Malkovich, Malkovich. Malkovich? Malkovich, Malkovich. Malkovich?
Malkovich studies the menu, but every item on it is Malkovich. Terrified, he tries to speak.
Malkovich! Malkovich.
Everyone there is a Malkovich, but in different clothing.
Malkovich. Malkovich. Malkovich.
Panicked, he races for the exit, but bumps into another Malkovich.
Malkovich! Malkovich!
He pushes through the restaurant of Malkovich's and out of the back door. Out of nowhere, he falls into the ditch, followed by Mr. Hiroshi.
How was it?
It was amazing this time.
That was no simulation!
I know, I'm sorry.
It's such an honor.
I have been to the dark side. I have seen a world that no man should see.
Really, for most people, it was a rather pleasant experience. I mean...
That portal is mine, and it must be sealed forever for the love of God.
But, Mr. Malkovich, sir, with all due respect, I discovered that portal. I mean, it's my livelihood, you understand?
It's my head, Schwartz! It's my head! I will see you in court!
What makes you think I won't be seeing what you're seeing in court?
Hey, Malkovich, think fast!
Fuck!
At home.
Dinner.
No, Craig. Once this was a relationship built on love.
You gave up that claim after the first time you stuck your dick in Maxine, Lottie.
Love with her first, Craig.
Yeah, but I didn't do anything about it out of respect for our marriage.
You didn't do anything about it, Craig. Out of respect for the fact that she wouldn't let you near her with a 10-foot pole.
Weary and ragged, Craig sits down on the sofa and looks at a haggard Lottie in the cage.
That's true. God, Lottie, what have I become? My wife in a cage with a monkey.
I need to go to the bathroom and take a shower.
Looking dazed and confused, he slowly shakes his head.
What am I? Some kind of monster? I don't want to be a monster, Lot. I don't want to.
Craig, you're not a monster. No. I know you're not a monster, honey. You're just a fairy. Very confused man.
I love you so much.
love you.
He walks over and opens the cage and sits down next to Lottie. He dials the phone and holds it to her.
JM Inc.
Maxine. Lottie. I've been thinking about us, you know, and, we have to meet.
Okay, I'll see you in Malkovich in 1 hour.
Alone and regagged, Lottie hurriedly tries to loosen her tied hands. Elijah sits watching her. Suddenly his eyes narrow and we enter his thoughts. The colour is washed out of the blurry memory. Through his eyes, we watch as he runs through the jungle trying to escape a group of hunters. Sat in a tree watching from above, we see the hunters tying up two chimps. Elijah rushes down to them. In subtitles, it says, "Son, untie your mother and father, quickly before they return. Hurry, Elijah." A net is suddenly thrown over all of them. Back in his cage, Elijah shakes his head as if shaking off the memory. He looks over at Lottie's tied hands and works furiously to untie the knots. He pulls off the rope and Lottie rips the tape from her mouth.
Oh, Elijah, you really are magnificent.
In the office, Maxine's putting on lipstick.
JM Inc.
Maxine!
Honey pie, I was just heading out the door to meet you.
No, listen, Maxine. It hasn't been me and Malkovich the last time. It's been that son of a bitch, Craig. He's been having me locked in the cage with my chip hunting and gun in my head.
God.
He made me call you. I'm sorry, Maxine. It's been him the whole time.
I'm so sorry. That's horrible.
I miss you so much, Maxine.
So, but... Okay, that was Craig inside of Malkovich?
Yes, it was him.
It's because he's a puppeteer, I think. Well, boy, I'm surprised. That's pretty impressive.
What?
So if Craig can control Malkovich, and I can control...
Maxine! I thought it was me that you loved!
I do.
She ponders to herself for a moment.
It's confusing, you know? This is a very confusing situation.
I know.
Listen, I should really... get going, okay? Because I'm going to be late for Malkovich now. We'll talk about this later, Lottie.
Maxine! Wait!
Okay.
Maxine!
Maxine hangs up. Lottie sits devastated on the floor. Dazed, Lottie walks barefooted through the streets of New York in the pouring rain. The light from the street lamps glisten in the darkness as it reflects off the wet roads. At Malkovich's apartment...
What the fuck do you want?
I can explain about the portal, darling.
Reluctantly, he opens the door.
Listen, don't con me, Maxine. I don't know who the hell you people are, but this insanity is now over.
Oh, shut up. Craigie. Craig. Schwartzy, are you in there?
He shakes uncontrollably.
How did you know it was me?
Lottie called me. She escaped your evil clutches.
Really? Well, I'm really sorry I did that, Maxine, but I'm really in love with you, and I just didn't know how else to be with you.
So apparently you can control this Malkovich fellow now, huh?
Yes, I'm getting better all the time.
I'll say you are. Hey, let's do it on his dining room table. Then we'll make him eat an omelet off of it.
No! Shut up, you overrated sack of shit.
Craigie.
Lottie sits in the back of a cab with tears welling up in her eyes. She bites her lip nervously as the taxi pulls up outside Dr. Lester's house. Wet through and frightened, she waits on the doorstep. Dr. Lester opens the door.
Yes?
Hi, Dr. Lester. It's Lottie Schwartz. Craig's wife?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, you'll catch your death out here. Look at you. You're soaking wet. Please, come in. Come in.
Wearing a toweling robe, Lottie warms herself by a fire. Lester comes in and hands her a cup of tea.
Here you are, my dear.
Thank you.
How's that?
Much better, thank you.
So, my dear, what is it that brings you to my doorway on such an inhospitable evening?
Well, Dr. Lester, you see, I have a very unhealthy obsession with John Malkovich.
I see. You mean the performer?
Yes.
And what prompted you to come to me with this issue?
Well, when I was here with my husband for dinner, I came upon a room that seemed to be some sort of John Malkovich museum. So I thought perhaps maybe you would have some appreciation for my state of mind.
You look so lovely, my dear, standing here before the fire in my oversized man's robe.
Thank you, Dr. Lester. Tell me, what is this strange power that Malkovich exudes? You've got to help me understand, because all I think about is wanting to be him.
Wanting to what?
Wanting to be him. Wanting to be John Malkovich.
I see. Well, perhaps you can.
But Dr. Lester...
I am not Dr. Lester. I am Captain Merton.
I don't understand.
It was 90 years ago that I discovered a strange portal, and I found that this portal led to a vessel body, and that I could live forever by leaping from vessel to vessel.
So Dr. Lester is such a vessel?
Yes, he is.
Back in the apartment.
You still there, sweet?
Mm-hmm. Figured out how to hang on as long as I want. It's all a matter of making friends with the Malkovich body rather than thinking of it as an enemy that has to be pounded into submission. I began imagining it as a really expensive suit that I enjoy wearing.
She strokes his bald head and he starts to kiss the inside of her leg. Sat by the fire, Dr. Lester shows Lottie a book.
Ah, this illustrates how I will move into my next vessel, Malkovich. On his 44th birthday. That's when he becomes ripe. But I must enter by midnight on that day. After that, I'd get diverted into the next newly forming infant vessel. I don't want that to happen. I'd be absorbed.
Absorbed? What does that mean?
Oh, well, trapped, held prisoner, if you like, in the host's brain. Unable to control anything. Forever doomed to watch the world through someone else's eyes. Now, I'd like you to meet some friends. See, I got lonely in Leicester by myself, so I figured out a way this time to take others along with me. Come.
He takes her into a room full of elderly men and women.
Everyone, this is Lottie.
Hi, Lottie.
Hi.
She's a new friend of mine.
Back at the apartment, Maxine lies relaxed in bed.
Do a puppet show for me, Craig, honey.
You mean with Malkovich?
I'd love to see your work.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay.
He wraps a sheet round his middle and grabs a CD and puts it on a stereo.
This is something that I call Craig's Dance of Despair and Disillusion.
He walks eagerly into the middle of the bedroom. He stands with his back to her and then paces up and down the room, rubbing his head in despair. He walks across to a mirror hanging on the wall. He reaches out and, staring intensely, delicately strokes his reflection. Suddenly his eyes widen in fear, and with seething rage he strides back to the table and hurls a candlestick at his reflection. The mirror smashes into hundreds of pieces. Enraged, he upturns a small table and throws chairs around the room before contorting his body into images of pain. He clutches his stomach and punches the air. Maxine sits on the bed, taken aback by what she sees. He pauses for a moment to catch his breath and then performs a complex contemporary dance. He thrusts his hands into the air and then to the side before spinning around and running at the wall, then turning and landing in a press-up position on the floor. He leaps into the air and executes a series of acrobatic moves and tumbles before collapsing to the floor. He covers his face with his hands and weeps.
That was incredible! You're brilliant.
You see, Maxine, it isn't just playing with dolls.
Oh, my darling, it's so much more. It's playing with people. Stay in him forever.
My darling, how will we make a living if our clientele doesn't have access to our product?
Well, we'll have all the money in Malkovich's bank account. Plus, he does get acting work occasionally.
No, please! Shut up! We're trying to think here!
Gee.
It is sort of like puppeteering. And I like that about it.
Exactly. And no one would ever even have to know it's not him.
And I could use Malkovich's existing notoriety to launch my own puppeteering career.
Oh, Craigie, that's brilliant. Oh.
At Lester's.
I've always wondered what it would be like to have a penis. Now I'll know.
Really? Yeah. I know it's very...
Lottie, we like you. We can see you're a kind and decent woman. And so, we've decided to offer you a place in John Malkovich with us, if you like.
She smiles politely before her face saddens.
Dr. Lester, you've been so kind to me and trusting, and there's just something I think you should know about the Malkovich Festival.
John's here to see you. Should I send him in?
Of course, send him right in. I'll never keep him waiting again, you understand?
Malkovich and Maxine saunter into an office.
Hey, John.
Great to see you.
Sorry about the cunted reception.
This is my fiancée, Maxine.
Oh, great to see you, Maxine. Sorry about the cunt of reception. Please, have a seat.
Maxine fondles his bald head as they sit down.
Can I get you anything? Want coffee? Water?
No, thank you.
Teresa, get me chicken soup.
Okay.
Chicken soup?
They shake their heads, and Maxine holds tightly on to a nervy Malkovich.
Larry? I want to get right to the point. From now on, I'm no longer an actor. I'm a puppeteer.
Okay, great.
Maxine beams proudly at Malkovich, who suddenly gains confidence.
And I would like to redirect my career so that from now on, the name John Malkovich will be synonymous with puppets.
Sure, no problemo. Poof, you're a puppeteer. Just let me make a couple calls.
Maxine whispers into his ear and he grins. Eight months later, a heavily pregnant Maxine hangs a baby's mobile above a cot in a modern and stylish home, whilst Malkovich sits watching himself on TV.
Honey? Me, Maxine? Maxine?
I'm busy.
Maxine, honey, it's on!
He is being interviewed as part of a program called John Horatio Malkovich, Dance of Despair and Disillusionment.
Yeah, there's the truth and there are lies, and art always tells the truth, even when it's lying.
The enigmatic John Malkovich, one of the world's greatest entertainers, and the man who reinvented how we view puppeteering. Tonight, we look at the man above the strings and the woman behind the man. Raised in Evanston, Illinois, Malkovich had a lifelong interest in theater arts, and as a young man was one of the founding members of Chicago's world-renowned Steppenwolf Theater Company. From there, it was a simple hop, skip, and a jump to Broadway accolades and Hollywood stardom. But nothing could prepare the public for what was to come next. And so it was that just 8 short months ago, John Malkovich dropped the bombshell that sent shockwaves through the entertainment community. Turning his back on his former profession, Malkovich had to start from scratch and pay his dues all over again as a fledgling puppeteer.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm John Malkovich. It's the Emmys. Really, John Malkovich.
From these inauspicious beginnings, John Malkovich's rise to stardom was fast and furious. His breakout performance occurred at this year's Emmy Awards.
It's really good. I look really amazing. I'd fuck me.
If there's anything that upsets me about it, it's feeling like if I move into it too quickly, I'll be, you know, deemed an imitator. But I think that once we all get the courage to just follow through on our instincts like Malkovich has, I think that a lot of us will move into puppetry.
Malkovich's rise to fame brought about a renaissance in the art of puppeteering.
No, what are you doing? What are you doing?
I'm making him weep, John.
You're making him weep, but you yourself are not weeping. Don't ever f*** with your audience until the puppet becomes an extension of you. It's a novelty act. It's Topo Gigio. No?
He's a technical genius. He breathes life into inanimate objects. It's a very godlike thing, you know, to be able to take something and, you know, make it live.
He was the talk of the town, from the Beltway to Broadway, aided in no small part by his new wife and manager, Maxine Lund. In Maxine, Malkovich had found his mentor, his muse, his inspiration. In Malkovich, Maxine had found the love of her life.
At Lester's.
My dear, relax. This travesty will all be over with by morning.
And the crowds have been absolutely sensational. And I'd just like to thank God for giving us this opportunity to share our creative vision.
Nothing was impossible for John and Maxine in the early days. Their union was a joyous one, and together they worked tirelessly to further Malkovich's puppeteering career.
John Malkovich, the artist, and Maxine, the entrepreneur, they make this character, this protean figure that we call John Malkovich.
But some say Maxine has changed since becoming pregnant, recoiling from the limelight, and rumor has it, from her husband's affections.
With a look of remorse, Maxine affectionately tucks the Lottie puppet into the baby cot upstairs.
So sorry.
She strokes the puppet's lips with her finger. Back on the documentary,
Malkovich shows us a reflection of ourselves, our frailties, and our, you know, desperate humanity. That's what makes him one of the most relevant artists of our time.
And what does the future hold for John Horatio Malkovich? Well, to quote the Bard, he's got the world on a string.
As the poet said, the puppeteer's voice need not merely be the record of man. It can be one of the pillars, the props, to help him endure and prevail. And I believe that.
It's over! Max, I gotta head down to ABT now. I've got the Swan Lake benefit tonight. Okay, but when I come back, we can maybe celebrate Malkovich's big 4-4. Okay? Jesus, why couldn't I have found the portal to a younger body? What if I fall tonight and break my hip?
At the packed-out benefit, Malkovich, who now has long, scraggy grey hair, meanders into stage door. During the performance, a beautifully sculpted life-size wooden puppet is lowered onto the stage. The audience watch mesmerized as the spotlight comes up on the marionette and it dances alongside the rest of the ballerinas. Above the stage, Malkovich works dozens of ropes and pulleys to make the puppet dance elegantly. Back at home, Maxine sits on the floor with a glass of wine. A pair of headphones are placed around her large baby bump. She strokes her belly lovingly.
Like that little girl? Holly Ann? I love you.
At the theatre, Malkovich focuses intensely as he operates the puppet. He moves it gracefully across the stage as the other dancers glide in a circle around it. The audience give the piece a standing ovation, and Malkovich and the puppet take a bow. At home,
Maxine?
Malkovich walks up the wooden stairs of his house carrying a large birthday cake. As he gets to the top, he notices the lounge has been ransacked.
Max.
Panicked, he rushes in and scans the room before picking up the phone.
Hello? Hello?
We have Maxine.
Oh, my God, please. Please, don't hurt her. Listen, I'll give you anything you want. Please.
No, you listen to me, asshole. I don't want your fucking money. What I want is for you to leave John Malkovich now.
Who is this, Lester?
Does it matter? You're gonna kill Maxine if you don't leave the body immediately. Okay.
But I can't do that. I mean, if I leave Malkovich, then I'm Craig Schwartz again. No career, no money. Maxine will have nothing to do. She barely has anything to do with me now.
Jesus, we're gonna kill your wife, you fucking lunatic!
God.
Lester Schwartz, Malkovich is our vessel. We're old. We're gonna die if we don't get into him by midnight.
He hangs up and stares down at the Craig puppet lying on the floor amongst the mess and broken glass. At Lester Corp, the elderly men and women watch on gloomily as Lester wearily puts down the phone. Lottie looks at him hopefully.
They called her bluff. Oh.
Shit! Can't we just go inside the portal and push Craig out?
No, he's much too powerful. Schwartz would just jam us down into Malkovich's subconscious.
Sat in the corner of the office, Maxine fiddles with the rope tied around her hands. Lottie glares at her. Seething, she walks over to her, biting her lip and shuddering with anger. Maxine smiles sweetly, trying to abate Lottie's rage. The clock on the wall behind Maxine reads 10:42. Lottie reaches in her bag and pulls out a gun.
Lottie, no! No, Lottie! God, no, we can't really kill her!
She's carrying Malkovich's team! I'm that special!
Maxine escapes through the portal. She falls out in Malkovich's parents' room.
Hey! Help me! Help me!
Lottie tumbles in.
Where the fuck am I?
We're Malkovich's subconscious.
Maxine rolls out of the way and runs through a school locker room. She tumbles into a basement where a toddler Malkovich sits rocking in a chair. Lottie chases after her as she crawls under the wooden floorboards. She pokes up through an iron grill to see a grown-up Malkovich sniffing knickers in the bathroom. Lottie tries to grab her.
You're creepy.
She races past a student Malkovich on a date. Lottie shoots at her. She misses and Maxine squeezes through a flap in the door and onto a school bus where young Malkovich has wet himself. Lottie drops onto the bus. She looks around, unnerved. Maxine leaps out at her from behind the seat and they both fall out of the door and into the ditch beside the New Jersey Turnpike. Lottie scrambles around in the pouring rain for the gun, but Maxine gets to it first.
I know!
I got pregnant when you were in Malkovich! You cannot fuck with me anymore, Maxine! I kept it because I knew you were the father. The other mother. Whatever, because it was yours. So, Paris. Together?
Malkovich sits at a bar deep in thought, staring at a shot of whiskey on the counter. He looks exhausted and disheveled. A customer wanders over to him.
Say, aren't you John Malkovich?
No.
Yeah, you are.
No.
I can't fucking believe you're in this shithole, man. This is John Malkovich, ladies and gentlemen.
Exhausted, he stands swaying in front of a mirror and stares with dead eyes at his ragged and unshaven face. In the office.
Yes. So you'll leave?
Yes, I said I am leaving.
All right. Do it now while I'm on the phone, so I can hear. And your lovely bride walks.
Okay. Okay. I'm going.
He falls from out of nowhere into the ditch at the side of the road. At the office.
Now, my friends, the time is now.
Craig lies in the ditch covered in mud, clutching hold of the piece of wood he first entered the portal with. In the bar, John Malkovich slowly gets up off the floor and rubs his tired eyes. The elderly men and women open the door to the portal. Malkovich looks in the bar mirror and touches his reflection.
I'm free.
The men and women crawl into the portal.
I'm back!
As they travel further into the portal, Malkovich shakes uncontrollably. Dr. Lester looks anxiously down the corridor.
Lonnie.
The clock on the wall reads 11:55. Craig looks up from the ditch to see Lottie and Maxine kissing at the side of the road in the pouring rain. Dr. Lester beams happily as he crawls into the tunnel and through the portal into John Malkovich. At the side of the road.
Hey! Hey! Maxine! I did it, Maxine! I left Malkovich for you, sweetie! I've no good being Malkovich without you! It proves I love you!
Fuck off!
Doesn't it?
He's not with us.
They speed off, leaving Craig stood in the rain.
Maxine, I love you! I'm gonna go right back into Malkovich and I'm gonna kick Lester out!
Seven years later. A balding Charlie Sheen saunters up to Dr. Lester's old house. A trim, well-dressed older Malkovich answers the door.
Machine.
Hey, Malkatrans.
How are you?
I'm very well, and
good,
you?
Good, good.
You look well.
Thank you.
How's Celeste?
She's good. She's good, yeah. She's sorry she couldn't make it today. She had to go to the store. You know, it's okay.
Charlie! I didn't even hear the door.
Looking great, Flo.
Looking grateful.
Charlie, we are not getting any younger.
Don't rub it in.
Listen, Char, I know it's going to sound crazy, but what would you think if I had told you that I'd found a way for us to live forever? All of us.
Johnny boy, what are you talking about?
All of us. Celeste, Floris, you, me, Gary Sinise, maybe.
understand.
He takes him into one of the upstairs rooms where there are photos hanging on the start of a timeline.
Charlie, this is Emily.
The two men look at the photos on the timeline. The images are of Maxine and Lottie raising a baby girl.
Isn't she lovely?
Lottie and Maxine sit with Emily.
Hey, pass the Cheetos.
You need more puffs?
I want more.
Okey-go. Covered in grease.
Shut up. Can I swim yet?
Can you swim yet? Should we do the cramp test?
Checker.
Let me see. Are you going to throw up? Let me see. Are you going to throw up? Are you going to vomit? Huh? Yeah. Okay.
We watch Maxine and Lottie cuddling from behind Emily's eyes.
Maxine, I love you, Maxine. Oh, look away. Look away. Look away. Look away. Look away. Look away. Look away.
The end.